WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's Hip Hop Week on Fresh Air, and we're featuring interviews with some of the most important DJs and rappers of the past 30 years. Ice-T was one of the originators of gangster rap. The music was criticized for glorifying gangs, guns, drugs, and fast sex. But Ice-T says the music is the truth of the life he once led. In 1992, Ice-T fronted a heavy metal band called Body Count and recorded Cop Killer, one of the most controversial rap records ever. Police groups called for a boycott of Time Warner, the parent company of the record label. After many protests against Cop Killer, Ice-T pulled the track from the CD. Of course, now Ice-T plays a cop on Law & Order SVU. He also played an undercover cop in the movie New Jack City. When I spoke with him in 1994, we started with an autobiographical rap from his CD Home Invasion. This is called That's How I'm Living.
I was born in New Jersey. I said it before, but I guess nobody heard me. My mother died young. No sisters or brothers, I was the only son. When I was 12, my pops died too. What's a brother supposed to do? They sent me out west to live with my aunt. I guess they thought that was the best. But there was no love then. But growing with no moms, I guess I was prepared to live in a vacuum. The bedroom, the kitchen, the hall, the bathroom. I didn't leave home much. Didn't like LA. Didn't have no friends to trust. Got bused to a school. Blacks and whites, I guess. School, but by high school I changed. Didn't want a bus, didn't want
Ice-T, welcome to Fresh Air. You were really one of the first gangster rappers. Did you relate to party rap when rap was starting?
When I first got off into rap, I tried to rap in the party rap type style because I was under the impression that's what rappers did. But it was kind of like I was faking it because I had never really rapped in parties and things like that. I was trying to rap like Sugar Hill Gang. And then I just started rapping about the life I was living. And that's how, you know, they call it gangster rap, but I call it reality-based rap, you know. And that's how that form of music got started.
Now, how did you start doing that? What was the turning point where you decided you weren't going to try to fake it and do the party raps, that you were going to talk about the life you knew?
Well, I made my first record ever I made was a record called Coldest Rap, and it was on a record called Cold Wind. One side was called Cold Wind Madness, and that was on an independent label. And it was very reality-based, but it was so early in rap. This was like 1982, and everybody else was rapping, you know, Run DMC style, LL Cool J and stuff. So I just was going along with the trend, you know, the way they go. But then after a while, my friends were like, you know, Ice, man, talk about what we do, man. Talk about how we live. And I did this song called Six in the Morning. It was a B-side. I really didn't think that that was what people wanted to hear, but the B-side turned out to be the biggest record and ended up being my identity, really.
Could you do a couple of lines from that?
What, Six in the Morning?
Maybe not, huh?
Yeah, I could do it. You know, okay. I mean, it went 6 in the morning, police at my door, fresh Adidas squeaked across the bathroom floor, out the back window I made my escape. Didn't even get a chance to grab my old school tape. Mad with no music, but happy because free. And the streets to a player is the place to be. Got a knot in my pocket, weighing least a grand. Gold on my neck, my pistol's close at hand. I'm a self-made monster of the city streets, remotely controlled by hard hip-hop beats. But just living in the city is a serious task. Didn't know what the cops wanted, didn't have time to ask.
Now, what was the very first time you took a microphone?
I was in the Army, and the record called Rapper's Delight had came out. And that was the first time I'd ever really heard it done to music. And on the B side of it, it was an instrumental. So here I am trying to say my rhymes over this instrumental. And they didn't really fit because they weren't written that way, you know. But that was my first attempt. And I came home attempting to do what, you know, they call rapping now.
Do you remember anything you said that very first time?
Well, I tried to say the street rhymes that I had been saying on the streets. You know, strolling through the city in the middle of the night, niggas on my left and niggas on my right. I used to sing like gang rhymes. I used to say rhymes that had to do with living in the streets, you know, and they just didn't fit, you know. But I started writing like party rhymes, like My name is Ice-T. I'm here. I'm your DJ tonight. I'm here to rock y'all hard. I'm going to rock you right. I'm going to move you in. I'm going to move you out. That kind of stuff. But that wasn't really what I was about. So I got back to the drama.
Right, right. And then did you feel like you had to find a different kind of music to fit it?
No, because music to me was the second thing. I was into the rhyming and the poetry that was involved. You know, the music always got in the way. And when we started doing the albums, I made a conscious decision never to make music that was danceable. Like, no, I didn't want to make dance-orientated beats.
When you're rapping, do you think of yourself as doing it in persona, or is that everything you say is you?
Oh, there's lots of ways to rap. Sometimes I want to become characters, and I can play a drug dealer or a drug addict. You know, I could become any person. You know, like in Cop Killer, I became a psychopath that went on a rampage. You know, that's not me. I'm not a psychopath that went on a rampage. I make records, you know. So it's like I become certain people. Other times, I say just crazy things. And other times I say things that are totally sincere and true. And I mean them. That's the hard part about understanding rap. It takes a real rap fan to really know. And within one sentence, I can go from fact to fiction to total fiction back to something I definitely mean.
Do you want your fans to know the difference between what's a character and what's really you?
Yeah, that's why when I do interviews and I talk to people, I don't come on and try to act hard and whoop whoop and all that old extra stuff. You know, I try to be normal. I mean, I drink milk, I play video games, I bounce my little baby on my knee. I'm a normal person. It's like, you know, I mean, it's like I always compare it to like horror film writers and producers. If you met Stephen King, I don't know, would you expect him to reach over and pull your heart out of your chest, or would you think that he's just a writer? It's like that, you know. Everybody's capable of making up insane characters. I mean, I got a tough side to me, but I don't have to walk around and, you know, flaunt it. I don't need to do that.
Before you started rapping, were you really good at talking? Could you talk your way out of tough situations and talk your way to use that as a con, too, when you needed it?
Exactly. I'm a much better talker than I am a fighter. I'm not really into, you know, conflicts with people. And I went to school and I did fairly well in my last few years of school when I realized that education was something that was necessary. And yeah, I can talk. I mean, that's what I really do for a living now. So I've learned to even talk better since I've been in the music business. And I've been doing so many interviews and been in so many debates and stuff. So I read a lot more now and, you know, try to keep my skills up.
What have you been reading?
What we're reading right here, we're just reading America's Military Policy on Small Wars.
Is this in a magazine or is that a
book? No, it's a little book I just got here. This is the case of El Salvador. I'm into information stuff. Anything I can, I learn a word in this book. I just found this word. You know what PSYOPS is?
Spell it for me?
PSYOPS. P-S-Y.
Oh, Special Service.
No,
you tell me.
PSYOPS.
Right. Psychological operations or
yeah,
something?
Yeah. So I'm learning about that. So you'll hear that in a rap. So I suck up information and try to put it back out on a beat because I know everybody ain't going to read this book. You know, they say, you know, there's a sad black joke. They say, how do you hide something from somebody black? You put it in a book. So I'm aware that a lot of, you know, my peers won't pick up books. So I pick them up and try to distribute the information another way.
Uh-huh. Now, you grew up in New York.
You know what that word meant, boy. I need to go kick it with you for a little while.
I end up interviewing the people who write these books. you grew up in New York, at least when you were very young. You were
yeah,
in New York.
Yeah, New Jersey.
In New Jersey, yeah. Thank you. And your parents died when you were young. Both of your parents were dead, I think, by the time you were 12. Can I ask how they died?
My mother died from a heart attack. And my father just died. I don't know. I just was called from school one day, and they're like, your pops is dead. And I'm like, oh. And then, you know, I never really got into his actual cause of death. He wasn't killed or anything, you know. He was, at the time, he had gone through a lot of pain, like arthritis and stuff like that. And they sent me from there. They told me, okay, well, you're going to come to L.A. for the summer.
Who's they? Who told you?
His sister, my aunt. Uh-huh. And then they were, then the next before when I got there in like 1 week, then all of a sudden all my clothes popped up out there in boxes. So I kind of like got shipped to California.
So that's how you ended up in L.A.?
Yeah, living with my father's younger sister, who wasn't really a nice woman. She was kind of like a woman who said, I'm taking care of you because I gotta shut up, sit down, all that. You know, so a lot of kids get moved around like that.
Now, if I have this straight, you had been, I think, at the suggestion of your aunt, bused to an integrated school that you didn't like. And then you wanted to go to school in South Central?
Well, not really. She lived in a nice area of Los Angeles. They lived in an area called Baldwin Hills. She lived in a nice neighborhood. It's like upper class blacks.
Uh-huh.
And they just, all the kids from that neighborhood got bused. I had no choice in busing to junior high. But when I got time to go to high school, a lot of those kids from up there wanted to continue to get bused to Palisades High, which was another, you know, white high school. But there was a Crenshaw High School was right across the street. It was walking distance, you know? So I was like, I don't want to catch the bus. I'll walk to Crenshaw. Everybody in the hills were like, ooh, you don't want to go to Crenshaw, though, you know? I'm like, why not, you know? And so I just walked across the street to the school that was closer.
So when you started going to Crenshaw High School in South Central, did you fall in with a different group of people than you'd been friends with before?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because in the hills, you don't have no friends, you know? I mean, there's not that many kids up in there. Different, you know, they're like different kinds of kids, and I don't know why, but I've always been like really based in real people, you know. And I got to Crenshaw High School, and I hooked up with the gangs, you know, because the whole school was being operated by gangs. So these guys, I didn't look like I was joining a gang. I just looked like they were my friends, you know. And I was all more of an affiliate member. I never really would claim a particular set, but I was known by a lot of the gang members, and that particular school was a Crip school. And I didn't see anything wrong with them. I mean, I got a lot of love. I got more love from my friends and their parents than I ever got at home.
In your book, The Ice Opinion, you wrote that you wanted to be a pimp.
Yeah.
Why did you want to be a pimp?
I admired pimps because when I was growing up, the only people that had everything around me were the pimps and the drug dealers, and I really wasn't into drugs because I don't do drugs or even drink, but I was like girls, so I was like, hey, that's the guy I want to be. And I just admired the lifestyle, and I got involved in it for a minute, you know, tried it out, but I didn't really like it, you know, because it's a harmful type of a game, you know, people end up hurt. But now I found out that there's only two jobs in the world. There's pimps and hoes. So it's the people who work for or the people who make you work. So that's why I guess that's the oldest profession, because it's either you're a pimp or you're a hoe. So I figured it out now. So I know what's going on with it. So like I said, when I was on Warner Brothers, I was a hoe. They were the pimp. They were the work. They worked me till I was burnt out, busted, or dead. Now I'm trying to pimp myself.
You know. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, well, everything can be broken down. Everything you see on the street, it's like it's only one game, right? You have capitalism and you have different versions of it. Drug dealing is capitalism. It's all the same. It's just what the laws say is legal and who gets hurt in the meantime. You know, the oil companies sell stuff, they pollute the water, but they can play around with it. So I try to teach kids, you know, all these little skills you're learning on the streets, whether they're negative or not, if you with a little changing and editing, you can transfer them right off into big business. And especially if you're a street crook, the best place to go right now is politics, because you'll find all your friends there.
We're listening to a 1994 interview with Ice-T. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1994 interview with Ice-T. Do you think that any of the gangster rap has hardened into a caricature of itself?
Oh yeah, a lot of it's corny. A lot of it's real fake. I mean, anytime I listen to a gangster rapper and he's talking about how tough he is and all this jail stuff and all that, and how many people, you know, he killed, and it's, you know, it's phony and fake, you know. Anytime it's glamorized to that point, I can tell you never been through it. Now, some people are artists at it. It's like Scarface does it to the point where it's like, he's like the Sam Peckinpah of rap. He writes it in such graphic details that it's like watching a feature film, you know? And I appreciate it. But then there's some kids I can just tell that have no idea what they're talking about.
Now, has listening to some of the people who you think are kind of phony and they're just posturing, has that had an effect on how you present yourself?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, what I tell new rappers I'm dealing with is, don't go for the hype, go for depth. Don't go for what you think is that much more exciting. Deal in details, you know, work on something that'll make somebody, because they have a saying on the street that says game knows game, which means if you're from the street, you'll know if I'm telling the truth just by the words I use and the phrases and how I handle certain situations. Five people could sit in a room and one of them says I'm a computer scientist and everybody else are hairdressers. So nobody knows if he's telling the truth unless somebody else in the room is a computer scientist. Then they know. And so I can sit back, and I know the hardest critics for gangster rap, or I call it hardcore rap, are the kids living it. And they can push it over on some of the suburban kids as being real. I've had a lot of kids that like, hey man, Ice, your stuff isn't as hard as the other guys. I'm like, that's because you don't, you know, you're going for the carnival gangster rap. You're not going for the real. My stuff is real. I'm hitting you just how it is. My bad guys don't get away. They end up on death row because that's how it happens.
Now, what does it make you think about when like suburban kids start emulating gangster rappers, both with the clothes and the language, when it's a life that's really when it's a life that's not real to them because they're so far removed from it?
I don't really have a problem with them emulating it, as long as they don't emulate the violence of it, you know, dressing like it, talking like it. You know, white kids have always emulated black culture. That's nothing new. Mm-hmm. You know, back from rock and roll. I just don't want them to take it to the further extreme, because the black kids in the neighborhood, gangster rap is not fueling the negativity down there. People are like, oh, well, the rap is making the kids violent. You could take rap, you could take the news, you could take movies and books out of the hood, and it would still be a violent place, because economic and social conditions create violence. It's the fact that I don't have no money in my pocket and you do creates a situation where I want what you got in your pocket. That's what's going on down there. Everybody's crabs trying to get out of a barrel. And now here in the suburbs, they listen to the music and, you know, they might think that that's being tough and all that kind of stuff. But I haven't seen any results of that. I've just seen a lot of parents yelling, my kid's talking like you. All right, that's cool. You know, I don't see suburban drive-bys on the incline or anything. So these are just what people that don't like the music. They don't like. See, there's people out in the world want power. Right. So when they see something else get power and they have no control over it, they want to bring it down. They're like, I don't like it because they won't listen to us, but they listen to y'all. So I'm mad. You know, that's just go make a rap record.
In the film New Jack City, in which I thought you gave, by the way, a really terrific performance, you played an undercover cop.
Right.
And for somebody who made records like Cop Killer, I wonder if you felt any empathy for cops while you were making that role.
Well, you know, like I said, when I made Cop Killer, I was portraying somebody other than myself. I can understand some of the ideas behind the Cop Killer. I mean, I can understand that being pushed to a maniac level. But when I did the movie New Jack City, I was kind of concerned. I'm like, oh, wow, I got to play the police. But it was more so, why does the answer to the problem have to be the police? Why couldn't I play just a citizen that wanted to change the city? Why, when the hero comes out, he ends up having to be the police? That was my little problem with it. But I talked around and I played it, and I played the cop that I wish all cops were like. I think I played a good cop, you know?
No, I think what you're saying is...
you know, it's like...
No, but I think what you're saying is interesting, that you're making distinctions that there's good cops and bad cops.
Definitely.
And I think the reaction a lot of people had to Cop Killer was that you were saying that all cops are bad, period.
90% of the people didn't even listen to the record, don't even know.
Well, I think that's probably true, that most people who had an opinion didn't hear it.
See, me and you, I'll discuss issues with you because I believe you understand me and you could maybe sit up and we'll probably fight, but you got to remember that you can sit up with any person and it's going to be a cold day when you agree on every point on everything. So, but most of the people attitude about Ice-T is what somebody told them or what they heard or something. Now, you know, I'm, you know, and also like my name in my book, it's only my opinion. I'm not God, you know, and that's all I'm saying. It's like, yo, let's at least be real enough to say what you think. I'm not nobody special.
Well, you are very influential, though. Especially to young people who really admire you so much.
The only way I'm influential is because I say what's on my mind. People are admiring people who have the guts to say what's on their mind. And everybody else is worried about, well, what do they say? I mean, think about it. Okay, I make movies. I do this. You couldn't possibly be worrying about a film career and sit up and say the stuff I say on the radio. You couldn't do that because you'd be, well, oh, wow, they might not put me in the next movie. I don't care. I don't care about these records, these movies. I don't care. I have to live my life from point A to point B, and that's saying what's on my mind. That's what I care about, being in tune with myself. And people respect that. That's why I'm on a college lecture tour. I'm on my way to Harvard or someplace to teach people how to be real. Isn't that stupid?
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Ice-T recorded in 1994. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.